Okay, solo episode today. Three topics: patience, burn the boats, and you can't live in a Bitcoin. So number one, patience. I quoted this. So this is a recent James Check, aka Checkmate newsletter. And he says, patience is one of the hardest skills to learn in markets, and boredom shakes out just as many people near the lows as red candles do. What does this mean? Well, it really resonated with me very, very strongly. I saw a similar thing in another book that I've read recently, which was Anthony Pompliano's book of lessons, or How to Live an Extraordinary Life. And it was an interesting one because he's probably not all that different in age to myself. And it's like, oh, what's this guy doing writing a memoir of lessons? But I like the framing, which was a set of letters to his children as to some of the lessons he'd already gained in life that were very helpful to him. And basically, it's this idea is investors, often the best strategy is time in the market rather than time in the market. And you'll hear other things like, we're buying to never sell. You know, there might be a real estate investor out there that's like, real estate investing, it's a buyer market. It's never a seller's market. Like, real estate is for buying. It is not for selling. That's just one example. But, you know, people like a long-only equity fund, they'll be looking for companies they want to own equity in for the long term. Now, what's James referring to when he's talking about patience? I'll quickly just go to the piece itself. It's called A Weird Cycle, and I'll link it in the show notes. It's an excellent newsletter. I highly recommend checking it out, and I'm a subscriber myself. And it's so helpful. I'm the target market in many ways. It's like, help out the hodlers out there. And okay, so the subtitle to the article is, this cycle's quite weird, and it's thrown many investors off balance. Some feel Bitcoin's performance is lackluster. Others were left behind in alts, and many are missing the forest for the trees. Now, I'm not going to go and read the whole article, obviously, but there's plenty of things in there that I felt really, really helpful. Just in terms of like, where are we at? What's going on? What actually represents good performance? And I think it was this one line, you know, like about being patient. As I said, I'll remind you, patience is one of the hardest skills to learn in markets, and boredom shakes out just as many people near the lows as red candles do. So commonly held psychology in investing, or anything, gambling even, people close out their position when they're ahead faster than when they're down. I.e., you know, you put in 10 bucks. As soon as you've made 10 bucks, like, sweet, double money, I'm out of here. Whereas you've lost 10, oh no, now you've lost 20, now you've lost 30. People hold the pain for much longer. And what James is quite rightly pointing out is like, sometimes it's just a bit boring. Like, hang on, it's the 3rd of June. What the hell's going on? You know, back in 2022, I said a timeline based on, of course, previous performance. And a good point here to make is like, past performance is not always indicative of future performance. That just because something has happened, and you can look at some trends, you can look at some, you know, some bands in terms of the technical analysis that you can overlay on charts and the price action. So it's very, very unlikely that we're going to break the 200-day moving average. So if we ever did, then that's probably a good opportunity to buy. And so are we being patient enough right now? Well, as I said, I set a strategy back in 2022 to hold Bitcoin until August of 2025. Now, we are literally weeks away from that time. It's a multi-year trade in some ways, or a long-term hold, as other people might call it. And you're like, okay, well, the truth is, the investment itself, it's done fucking well. 4x, 5x up on capital invested. Well, it makes sense to take profits. Okay, but when? And there were people out there, shout out to Dr. Jeff Ross, who's someone actually I find really inspiring in terms of their approach to all of this, but on what Bitcoin did a couple months ago with Danny, talking about a 400,000 plus US dollar Bitcoin price. And he's looking at global money supply and thinking, okay, the tap's about to be turned on. We're going to see some outrageous asset price shifts, and in particular, Bitcoin is going to fly. And I don't think Jeff's wrong, but like, when? And we're now like June. And hang on, so we're just fluttering around 100,000 US dollars a coin. What, so it's going to 3x from here in the next 3 to 6 months? Like, is that really possible? And so who knows, right? Time will tell. But James's analysis is so on point, because it's like, guys, sometimes it's okay that it's just boring. And that's in particular true for an asset class like Bitcoin, because as I've studied, at least, the main price action of Bitcoin happens in a very short period of time. It's something like 9 to 10 days of the year are the days with the most price action to the upside. So you've got 350 days of sitting around doing absolutely nothing, and then just it flies, and a new normal is set. And so that's what we're sitting around doing. Is there still a bullish case to be made for Bitcoin in terms of other areas that you can look at? Like, what's happening in terms of hash rate? What's happening in terms of user adoption? What's happening in terms of the actual transactions going on the network? Like, is it actually busy? There's all sorts of other areas that you can start to look at. I mentioned already the global liquidity of central banks, like M2 globally, is a very, very important number to be looking at. And Dr. Jeff's quite right about that. But the point is we don't know when this stuff's going to happen. And that's what investing is in some ways. It's like, okay, sit down and make a bet. You know, you get given your £100 today. It needs to be there in a year's time in terms of purchasing power. What are you going to do with it? And how are you going to get it there? And maybe it's not a year time horizon. Maybe it's 2 years or 20 years or 25 years. It doesn't matter. The point is that as an investor, you allocate capital and then you wait. And whether you're buying Bitcoin, which is a monetary network, you own a piece of the base layer of the future monetary system, I believe that we will have, or whether or not you're buying a fraction of a company like an equity, or you're buying a bond, or you're buying a classic car, it doesn't really matter. The point is, it's like, once you've done it, you've got to then wait for your thesis to actually play out. And so a good example of this in terms of equities is I took a speculative position in a company called Matador at a pre-IPO deal at the very end of last year, Q4 of 2024, something that I hadn't done before, frankly. And it was very interesting for me just to go through the process. But once I decided I was going to do it, you have to do the paperwork and then you just have to like send the money. And in this case, it was on fiat rails to a company that's operating in the US, but the share listing was happening in Canada. And so you were using TransferWise to send to a fiat denominated bank account. It took days. It was expensive. It wasn't always very easy to figure out how to do. And you're like, God, Bitcoin's so much better than this. That's not the point of this story here. The key being is that I was like, this is a bet I want to make. And I believed in particular, Mark Moss, shout out to Mark, who was close to the business, was making an investment himself. And I was able to leverage his experience and my relationship with him to go, okay, this is a bet that I'm willing to take. What percentage of my assets am I going to actually place in this bet? I made all those decisions. Okay, then you've got to do it. And it's now June and 6 months has gone by. And that the IPO happened later than what was expected. And then actually it traded underwater. Like, you could have bought shares in that same company for less than what I paid for months of trading activity. In some ways, I regret not adding to my position. But the point of making a decision is like, okay, this is the allocation I'm going to make. You make it and you sit and wait. Now, could I have said to myself, oh, if this trades down, I'm going to add to the position? Maybe. But it was never a quick sell. So I'm just going to sit on it for a few years and see what happens. And if this Bitcoin treasury company strategy works, which I think it's likely to do, then, you know, your initial investment is going to do very, very well. Where am I going with all this? Point is, James, great call. Guys, just be patient sometimes. That's all we've got to do. You make your decision. You've got to be strong in your strategy. You've got to understand why you're doing something. And then you've got to do it. And then you've got to sit and wait. And half the problem with an investor with itchy feet is keeping yourself occupied. Now, the great analogy of this that I always find myself thinking about, and this is particularly in relation to Bitcoin going mainstream, which a lot of people are saying that's now the case, but I'm not completely sold on that, to be honest. There is a great movie called The Big Short, and in it, Christian Bale plays a hedge fund manager who basically called the real estate blow up of 2007-2008 in the US that caused what was called at the time the Great Financial Crisis. And there's a scene in which he is into playing drums and he's closed the door of his office. He's got a drum kit in there. He's in a t-shirt and he's playing heavy metal. And he's just literally just tuning out everything. And the investors in his fund are calling the phone. He's hung the phone up and they think he's gone completely mad because he's shorted what they see as a really valuable, real estate market. And you're like, what the hell's going on there? And the point is he's being patient. He's made his decision. He's allocated his capital. Boom. What happens? Well, you've got to sit on your bum and you've got to wait to see. Now, shout out to James because there's some other good stuff in there that I'm going to try and pick out because I'm just going to flick back through it. Again, we'll link this in the show notes, but there was a little bit that he spent some time looking at the CAGR. And so this is the compound annual growth rate. And in general, I think of Bitcoin as about a 50%. But of course, like if you take Bitcoin and you look at the compound annual growth rate since inception, then, you know, it's obviously it's an extraordinary return, right? But I think it's more important to start looking in terms of windows. It's like, okay, well, the halving is a very, very important time in the Bitcoin monetary policy process. And maybe that's something important to look at. These four-year cycles that are happening are a trend that I think are going to be very hard to break. Even though people start talking about super cycles and all this kind of thing, it's like why would the trend break? It looks like it's, you know, fairly well set for multiple reasons. And I think that will continue to be the case. But James looks at a 2-year, 4-year, and 6-year CAGR. It's like, okay, so over a 6-year window, Bitcoin is pulling off a 92% CAGR, which is unbelievable, right? Now, on a 2-year basis, CAGR is still at 40%. So people are sitting here and they're going, oh, Bitcoin's boring, nothing's happening. If you continue to hit 25% CAGR, then we will smash through gold's market cap very, very quickly. And if we did a 50% CAGR, then we'll start to hit the total US equity market, right? So the point is if the CAGR percentage stays as high as this for a sustained period of time, then you're going to start to see it eat up all these other different asset classes. And I do think that will happen when you look at the breakdown of global assets, in particular the bond market and the real estate market that have been used as store of value. And now Bitcoin just does that job so much better. Like, why would you keep your money over there? Shout out to James. Like, being patient, absolutely key. Absolutely key. And it's just, it's a good lesson to receive right now. Because I don't think Bitcoin's being boring necessarily. But just take a breath, zoom out. What's actually going on here? Well, there's a software project that is absolutely eating central banks for lunch, and we're separating money from state. This is a big deal. It's the first time that digital property rights or property rights in general have been accessible to any individual. The base case or the base layer for a digital renaissance has been created, and power is being put back in the hand of a user, back in the hands of the individual. And a libertarian project is unleashing itself on the world, and no one's even really paying attention, right? Oh, 100 grand a coin. Had you put your money in a couple of years back, you've done a 4x. But nah, it's boring. Number two. So this is burn the boats. Again, I'm going to just reference something that I posted. So I like playing around on Nosta, as you know, and in particular, the culture for saying good morning is something I really like. I don't vibe with the good night stuff so much, the good morning one. Let me read this out. So good morning. This morning I was upset, anxious, quiet, and stewing away in my own mind. This made me short-tempered, snappy with my kids, and not that nice to be around. Why? Compare and despair. Let me explain. I'd been contacted by a young family member asking for an introduction to anyone that might help him find a job, having just finished uni. I have good friends all across the previous market I worked in, but I was hesitant to reach out for some reason. My life has moved on. I found myself messaging an old friend and they were telling me about how much the company has grown and changed. It was like I got FOMO. I went and checked the website. I saw all my old colleagues still working there. Gosh, I gave that life up. I walked away from the opportunity it represented. Did I make the right decision? So I started questioning myself, beating myself up, ruining what money I could have made. It put me in a shitty mood. Anyways, long story short, I've since had a good workout, breakfast and swim. My observation is that the compare and despair psychology is so powerful, it really catches you out if you're not careful. But by definition, when you choose to travel a path less known, it gets lonely. It's hard. You're isolated. There will always be moments you question yourself. It's inevitable you'll have moments like this. Thankfully, when I tune in, ask myself what I really want, one, I know I'm working towards it, and two, I know it's not the life I walked away from. So to all the people out there trying new things, go for it. Control what you can, care less about the opinion of others, follow your dreams. Whoa. I was pissed off. And I wrote about it. And one of the beauties of content is you don't know who's reading and or listening for that matter. And what comes back is sometimes the magic, in a sense, rather than the initial post. And what's happened here in particular is I was obviously being real. Like, life isn't perfect. Sometimes you're pissed off. And when you're pissed off, you're grumpy with your kids. And you're like, ah, why am I being such a jerk to be around? And in this case, it's that sense of a missed opportunity that was really bugging me. Like, you know, I was really good friends with these guys. And I did lots of good business with them. And they were great people. And almost 10 years has gone by since I left this particular business, which is crazy for me to think. I've taken a lot of risk in that I left behind a career opportunity that could have been something I did for the rest of my life. But I personally knew it wasn't right for me. And I would ask myself, like, is this it? Is this really what I'm going to do? And I knew that it wasn't right. And I had to change things. Now, admittedly, my personal situation was different to a lot of others in that I received an inheritance due to the loss of my father as a young man. And he was a wealthy guy. And so I got some capital that enabled me to make some decisions that others might not have made, in that I could quit a career and I could go and try and do it myself, do my own thing. I was hell-bent. I wanted to build my own business of some form. I wanted to invest in other businesses. I wanted to control my own time. And 9 years later, I'm still very much on that journey and figuring it out. And it's by no means answered. And lots of stuff has gone wrong since. But to share with you what happened after sending this, which is the fun bit, I'll bring it up. And I'm not going to say who sent me this, but I just want to read some of it because it's really quite impressive. So, mate, your last Nosta post, you're right there where you need to be mentally. Stood in your own fear objectively for a short period of time to understand it. It's very, very positive. Good effort. You know that one. Pain is just weakness leaving the body. Gym pain, that's actually true. Stab yourself in the eye, not so much. Wheel back to emotional pain, viable, pressing, negative feelings arising from introspection. Weakness leaving the mind. Sat around in your own head in loops. Not. I can just see a fellow traveler, you're about to push down some walls, and that's fucking brill. I can literally feel that your level of conviction and seriousness about what you want has recently gone up as a result of redefinition, and it's all new, and you're half worried about what total commitment to your challenges will result in. Burn the ships, and hence the title of the second point. To us, the burning of the ships paraphrases the act of absolute commitment by forcing the mind to think and act progressively in order to complete a goal. Anything in life worth having is hard to get. We burn our ships to narrow our focus. There is no retreat from this beach, no way to go back home, forward or oblivion, mate. And there was a few other bits and pieces here, but I just loved that. It was a really supportive message, and it was recognition of progress being made, which ironically, you can't see in yourself in that moment of anxiety, frustration, FOMO, compare and despair. And so what is this all about? It's obviously it's personal development, right? Working on yourself, figuring out how to think better and try to push for different results or better results or do something different. And so when you sit down and you have an idea is in some ways a dream, and that dream, you can try and action it or you can't. And when you decide to, such as in this case, it's like, okay, I want to strike out on my own. I want to run a podcast that is, it's going to specialize in long form conversation, and it's going to be me speaking to other people. I'm going to use that platform to then build multiple other businesses as the right opportunities that come up align with what I actually want to do and how I want to spend my time. But getting there is really hard, because actually some days you're like, oh, maybe that's a better opportunity. Or maybe I should have done that. Or, oh, I really fucked up. I probably should have kept that job that I used to have. And the point is burn the goddamn ships. There is no route back. Figure out the way forwards. And that got me really pumped, because I'm like, well, first of all, here's a friend that I wouldn't have had I stayed in that old job, one. Two, it's so correct. It's like, until you actually take that step, you take the risk, you head in a direction that you want to go, but you're not sure how to actually get there. It's like you have the target or you have the destination, but you don't know what the journey or the road is to get there. And that's okay. And unsurprisingly, when you're on that road, there are moments of frustration and there are moments of fear and there are moments of self-doubt. To use the word that I had, what was it? I was stewing away in my own mind. Like, I think we've all been there, right? It's like, ah, isn't that painful? Anyway, to anyone out there that's thinking of trying something new for the first time or wants to bring an idea into reality, of course, sit down and think about, like, why? Like, why do you actually want to do that? Is it what you want to do with your very, very limited time? Like, attention is our scarcest asset, as I keep talking about. In previous episodes, you know, it's like where we point our attention every day is the most important decision we make. And the only thing scarcer than Bitcoin is human time. So we've got to make sure that we're making the right decision. But in some ways, you have to take the first step to see what unfolds. And I love that process or phrase of action leads to clarity. So, okay, we'll start trying and see what happens. And you're not going to get it right straight away. In fact, you're going to fail loads. This is reminding me of another post that she made today. One second, where is it? Shout out to BTC Gandalf for this. I was reading some of his excellent newsletters about You Are the Monopoly, which I highly recommend people have a look at. But he quoted, to be good at something, you must first suck at it. It's like, absolutely true. But guess what? If you burn those boats, there's no way back. You have to figure it out. And that's what was quite fun about this, I guess. So what I wanted to do with this is share that, like, I do have moments of self-doubt. And I do have moments where I'm like, is this the right decision? Am I going in the right direction? And what's, I think, the most interesting thing to do with that is to recognize it and observe it. It's okay to be emotional. It's okay to have feelings. But then what you do with those is the key. Like, how do you process them? To go back to this brilliant message that I received, what you actually are seeing at that point, when you can look at it and process it effectively. So emotional pain, viable pressing negative feelings arising from introspection, weakness leaving the mind. Isn't that a cool concept? So it's like we can start to actually filter our thoughts And to help move them on, process them is another way of thinking of it, and through that become stronger. And so in sharing this moment of weakness, I now feel stronger, which is so cool. And I'd love to share this in the hope that someone out there who might be struggling with a moment like this as well, like, just share, because other people out there will support you. And the process of sharing and the process of support, it actually makes you stronger. So even though it might be a case of showing weakness or being vulnerable, that moment of weakness is the key to actually evolving and progressing. I'll leave that one there. So final point, you cannot live in a Bitcoin. It's something I've said before, and it's something I'll say again. What has happened for me recently is the experience of being a father of young children, married, with so many areas of my life really hammering on full power. Like, I couldn't be happier with how a bunch of things are working out right now. But there's one like big elephant in the room, essentially, which is, where do I house my family? And as a man, I feel very, very responsible for this fact. I heard someone describe recently that the man brings the house, the woman makes the home. And it's a nice little quip that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, where are we going to be safe and secure? And how do I know that I'm doing the best job I possibly can be? Like, am I happy about how things currently are? And although it's true that in 2022, when I decided to sell the last piece of physical real estate that we had, the financial returns for that decision are fantastic. But the physical reality of not controlling the space, like not controlling your shelter, has been much, much harder than I expected. My initial thought process, and this is fun to consider, like, you know, as an investor, you've got to make your decision and then you've got to actually do it and just see what happens. You've got to sit in the strategy for some time. I was on the impression, like, I can sell this house and buy some Bitcoin. And with that, I'm then going to rent a nicer house in a nicer neighborhood. And to some extent, we've absolutely managed that, but we've bumped into a series of frustrations along the way. Some of that undoubtedly is the fact that we have a very specific standard that we're interested in paying for. And what we've seen in the real estate market here in Australia is just no one's interested in providing that standard. And you end up in these ridiculous conversations with landlords that want to spend absolutely no money on their property whatsoever. And they tell you that you're in the wrong for highlighting the problems that the property has. One particular scenario in the previous long-term rental we had was we were all sick. Like, what's wrong with us? Why can't we get rid of this cold and this cough? My wife was heavily pregnant and she found herself with a broken rib because she'd coughed so much. And we did some mold testing. We were living in Byron Bay at the time, which is a beautiful part of Australia, but also very, very humid, right? The humidity levels get well up into the 70s and 80% ranges on some days. And with that, the mold just absolutely loves it. And so we were living in a house that, although it was only 24 months old, was riddled with mold. And we were suffering from mold exposure. My kids' behavior was very obviously affected. We found it in a stool test that we did. We found it in urine tests that we did. It was inside us, simple as that. Anyway, we go to the landlord and explain to them that we found this problem. And the ultimate conclusion was they probably would have let us break lease, but we didn't have anywhere else to go. So, well, hold on, Jake. You know, you sold your house. If you don't carry on renting this one, you don't have another one. And I guess what I've learned is that I wasn't thinking far enough ahead. And so another book that I've been going through recently that's helped me really understand this is by Patrick Bed-David of Valuetainment, who I'm sure you guys will have come across before, as someone who's built themselves a really interesting content platform. Now, most recently, I saw his interview with Saylor, and he was pumping some altcoin. So hasn't quite figured out the Bitcoin side of things yet. One, that's interesting because someone I would aspire to recreate their success, i.e. built a business, sold it, now has a interesting podcasting platform, hasn't figured out Bitcoin. That's really interesting because we're front running those characters, which is awesome. But B, I bought his book, you know, because I'm like, I want to learn more about these people. Like, how do they get in these positions? And it was talking about being multiple moves ahead. And so my strategy of, well, it's simple. Let's just sell the house, buy some more Bitcoin. That'll do its thing. In the meantime, we can just rent a nice house in a nicer area. That hasn't proved to be bulletproof enough, especially under the stress of three young kids, right? Three kids under five. And we've moved house. Oh my God. Like, it's going to be like 10 times in the last 2 to 3 years. It's crazy. I think I counted that my wife and I have moved 10 times since we left the UK and moved to Melbourne, which was in early 2020. So in 5 years, we've moved 10 times. And what I'm now finding is that it's taking up so much time from an emotional capacity in terms of like, where are we going to live? Where are we going to live? Where are we going to live? Obviously, do whatever you want as an investor, allocate your capital however you best see. But I think one of my big lessons about this is that you really need shelter, that there is no getting around that fact. And if you're going to take an approach like my wife and I have of wanting a healthy home, aka not riddled with mold and whatever other things you want to talk about that consist of being a healthy home, you then are going to come up against problems, essentially. So again, sharing my reality in that sense, that this was a decision that has worked very well for a number of reasons, but also in hindsight is not working so well. So where is it going to go from here? Well, it's true that Bitcoin's purchasing power has continued to increase, as any Bitcoin maxi's thesis would deduce. The question will be then, it's like, do you take profits in some way? They might just become the most expensive decisions you ever make. Yes, you've done 4 or 5x from when you invested, which is fantastic. But Bitcoin's still only a $2 trillion asset. It's not even 1% of global wealth. Like, this thing has an easy a 10x in it if it takes the gold market. It's like, the house you go and buy now is a very, very expensive house in 5 years' time in Bitcoin terms. You know, you could buy 4 or 5 of them. But it solves your immediate need for shelter without the requirement to move out every 12 months or 6 months, as the case might be. So I'm trying to figure out ways around this. Now, of course, you have a very, very well-developed real estate market here in Australia that is full of financial products that will help you leverage. And people will give you money based on the value of the property. Say it's a $1 million house. They'll go, okay, here's 80% of the value of the house. You've got to put down 200 grand. And then you've got to pay me 10% a year of the 800K you've got. So it's going to cost you 80 grand in interest payments for the duration of the time you own the property. Well, okay, maybe that makes sense, but you still got 200K there that's not sitting in Bitcoin, and you'd still have to sell 80K of Bitcoin each month unless you've got additional cash flow resources to cover that with. And it comes down to opportunity costs and problem solving. And so that's where the Austrian School of Economics is so helpful, you know, that value is subjective. It's in the eye of the beholder. Right now, because of the difficulties I've had housing my family for all sorts of different reasons, I really, really, really want to buy a family home. So I'm like a motivated seller of Bitcoin and a motivated buyer of a house somewhere. But at what point are you actually being foolish and selling your Bitcoin? I don't know. It's something I need to sit down and figure out. But that the practical side of selling your house and not having physical real estate when the father of a young family has its difficulties. So beware, anyone out there that's considering of doing this, there are certain things that you want to get in place. Now, I have other friends that have done it too. Shout out to them out there. I won't mention their names, but they know who they are. And they've had a really easy time renting for some reason. They're in the same rental property they moved into the day they sold the house. They've got it for as long as they might need, and there just hasn't even been an issue. But for some reason in my journey with my wife, it's throwing up lots of pain. So we'll see. Anyway, those are my 3 points for today. Patience, critical. Just sit on your hands sometimes and let the market come to you. The second, burn the boats. And it's so true. Like, just sit down and really, really focus in on what you want to do. And I just love that idea of honing your craft. And then thirdly, the idea of not being able to live in a Bitcoin. So just beware, anyone that's considering doing that, there are definitely some road bumps to life without a fixed abode. Anyway, trust everyone's very well. Always open to hearing feedback and any comments people might have. Thank you so much for your time.